November 19th. That is crazy. I know I say it probably once a week, but I can't believe how fast this month, this year is going. Both of them, they're flying by. I feel like I barely came out of the fog from October, and here we are. We're just about a week until Thanksgiving. And I heard this on the news on my way into work on Monday night. 80 million Americans expected to travel at least 50 miles from home for the Thanksgiving holiday. And it's a great one to travel, right? Because if you work for most companies, you get a standard four-day weekend. The problem is it's the most heavily traveled weekend of the entire calendar year, which means it's you and roughly 80 million of your closest friends. We've actually got company coming in. So last year, Pete, I traveled on Thanksgiving weekend because I was going to a funeral. And so I needed to go. I wasn't going to miss it. So I had to travel. I traveled on Friday. I came back on Sunday. The travel weekend, according to AAA, is now greater than pre-pandemic levels. So there's none of that left over. People are on the move. They want to spend time with families, which I think is terrific. But yes, 80 million Americans, which is a good chunk of us. In fact, if you think about it, in a country that's, what, 330 million roughly? I don't know about the new census. I mean, that's an enormous chunk. And this is right on the heels. I hear this right on the heels of Spirit Airlines declaring bankruptcy. We actually have family flying to New Jersey on Spirit Airlines. I didn't tell them. I didn't want them to worry. Spirit says that everything is going to operate status quo. So I thought maybe I won't tell them that their airline has declared bankruptcy.
I think they'll get the hint when they ask for the charge for breathing on that airline.
Breathing.
That airline,
I've never had any issues with them.
I'm not a fan of them. I'm going to be very, that's all I'm going to say.
Okay. Fine. Everyone has their own experiences. Yeah. I travel with them. I recognize that sometimes you're taking a risk, but I've never had any issues with them. And if you're traveling without a bag or you don't care about buying a seat, you can get it a little bit cheaper, which is nice. But so considering Spirit and the bankruptcy, maybe people are nervous. But nearly a quarter of the population in our country is going to travel over Thanksgiving. And that means a lot of people on the road, some people driving, some people flying. Just be prepared. Just be prepared. There will be travel headaches. There will be travel issues, regardless of how you go.
And lots of waiting.
I'm so not good at that. That's why I'm staying home. No, I'm excited to host. I was home last year. It was a unexpected change in travel plans at the last second. So I did end up at home last year, though I had a friend come over. This will be different. We've got family. Crazy too, Pete, because there's only four of us and we've got a really long list for shopping this weekend. And I'm thinking about the people who are hosting. I've got a friend who's up to 13 at her Thanksgiving. What the shopping list must look like to feed 13 people. What about you?
We do my family, my side of the family in the morning for breakfast. And then we go to my nice in-laws for the afternoon, evening. And
are you hungry by then?
Yeah, because it's different food. For me, I position myself to be hungry then. But it's very deep. My wife's uncle makes the dinner and does a whole big thing. It's a big to-do. He loves doing it.
That's awesome.
So it's a lot of food. We dig deep into the vegetables and all that stuff. And then at night there's supper where you're having sandwiches with potato chips and
leftovers.
Whatnot. Oh, it's unbelievable. It is really. And my mother-in-law was talking about it today about what type of butter they're gonna get, you know. So like all this stuff is already in the works.
It is my favorite holiday. It's my favorite meal of the year. So I cannot wait. Though this will be my first time making a turkey solo. I had a turkey breast last year in the crock pot. It turned out really well. Though there might have been some swearing, me trying to oil up the turkey. That was not easy. Oil and then the breadcrumbs
might have been.
I vaguely remember. So my husband and I will be doing the turkey ourselves because our in-laws don't don't cook, so this will be a fun challenge for us. If we survive and get to, now we're getting close to our one-year anniversary. If we survive and get to our one-year anniversary, I kind of feel like we can get through anything. If we can get through the challenge of somehow getting the turkey in the oven without killing each other. We'll do a lot more about Thanksgiving coming up, but it's just over a week away. So I hope you've got some fun plans in place. I love to say about Thanksgiving, it's all the F's. And we do care about the F's. It's the family. It's the friends. It's the food. It's the fun. It's the football. It's the faith, of course. It, to me, it's the consummate holiday, and the meal is delicious. Well, let's hope it's delicious in our home. I guess I shouldn't say that yet until I'm quite certain. However, I know the baked goods will be delicious. We've got the turkey. We've got a bunch of sides. My husband's largely in charge of the sides. But I got dessert duty, P, because you know that's what I'm good at. So a walnut apple crisp in a crock pot. I've been bragging about it for 2 years, so let's hope it turns out really good.
Yeah.
I mean, my husband's heard about it for 2 years before he was my husband. I'm making also the pie that I tried last year initially that I burned to a crisp in the oven. This is a walnut crusted pumpkin pie, and that's what happened in the broiler. You're supposed to put it in the broiler for a couple of minutes so that the walnuts can brown up, except that they caught on fire. So that was tremendous. Maybe I'll share that photo again. It's one of my baking faux pas. The second edition of the pie turned out really well. And then I'm going to make some type of cookies or bars. In the past, I've wanted to take desserts to the local firehouse, and I got intimidated thinking, oh, it's COVID. They won't take them, blah, 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 whatever. I'm doing it this year. I'm going to take some desserts to the firehouse.
You see what some of those firehouses eat? Yes, they would want dessert.
I tried a new recipe for cookies last weekend. Oatmeal butterscotch with white chocolate. Oh, so good. I have a few for you, by the way.
Oh,
so if you'd
nice.
Like, on our Hump Show, I'll bring them in and you can do a taste test.
Oh, excellent.
And if you choke on the air, then I won't make those again.
At least it's on the air. Content.
It's radio gold when our producer chokes on the host cookies on the air.
Just get me to go viral. That's it. You know, like, if I'm choking, put it somewhere
else. No, stop it. That's awful. Good morning to you. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We're through week 11 in the NFL. We're asking you, where are the coaches that are perching precariously on the hot seat? So you can answer that question at Amy After Hours. And yes, Mike McCarthy is our inspiration on our Facebook page as well. It's not just the fact that the Cowboys are losing. It's not just the fact that they look woefully inept. Their run game is among the worst in the league. In fact, right now, they're averaging fewer than 90 yards per game. We knew this was an issue. It's 31st. I actually didn't look up who's dead last in the NFL. It might be fun to kind of guess and then look. They're also 31st in the NFL in points allowed by that defense. Yes, lots of injuries that affect them. But honestly, half the time, it looks like they don't give a crap out there on defense. I'm sure that's not the case. I'm sure there are guys who do care, but when they get behind and they do fall behind in what seems like these holes that they can't possibly climb out of, why? Because they don't have a quarterback and they don't have a running back right now. They fall behind in these big holes and it's almost like the defense just pulls the plug. Let it go. Let it go down the drain. The body language stinks. CeeDee Lamb is disgruntled and frustrated. I get all of those things. But on camera, the TV cameras now know to focus on him. Because you want to talk about gold. This is visual gold. Every time you focus on him, he's making a face or he's complaining or he's body language is awful. That comes from the coaches. Of course, they set the tone. And the captains, their leaders, they need to get everybody on board. But that's certainly not the case for Dallas. And I'll give you one more piece of evidence. And to me, this is the worst part about the Cowboys season. Teams go through losing seasons. Teams struggle. It doesn't necessarily mean the entire organization falls apart. But here's the most damning piece of evidence for me when it comes to the Cowboys. Not only are they winless at home, in every single game at home, they're getting creamed. That's embarrassing. They have the most beautiful facility, one of the most beautiful facilities in the NFL. I would say SoFi is right up there in terms of gorgeous facilities and state of the art. AT&T Stadium is a bucket list stadium, a bucket list destination for a lot of football fans. It's beautiful. The Cowboys had rattled off 16 straight wins at home. It was part of their pride that they could defend the home field. Well, since they lost that game to the Packers, and this does include the Packers game in the wild card round when they got demolished, they have fallen behind by 20 points in each of their last six home games. That is embarrassing. Where is your pride? I get that you're not as talented right now, certainly not at the quarterback position, and Jerry Jones deserves the blame for the fact that he didn't improve the running game. You can't just say, oh, we missed out, so, well, let's try over here. They should have spent the money. That's an area where they should have spent the money. I don't know their salary cap situation completely. I get that they're trying to be creative with these other stars, but they have left themselves with a fatal flaw. So that's one. The injuries on defense, that happens to a lot of teams. You're going to have to overcome it. Think about the Detroit Lions and the fact that they have lost their star pass rusher. The issue is the Cowboys' offense can't score enough points to overcome the holes or the injuries, the messes on the defensive side of the ball. The offensive line is a disaster. The run game is worse. The defense is awful. Now they don't have Dak. I mean, it's just, it's embarrassing, but it's worse that they're getting completely shown up and humiliated at home, and the fact that there doesn't seem to be any type of a spirit that we're gonna continue playing our asses off. Where is that spirit? Where is that grit? Where is that, I'm tired of being embarrassed. I'm going to play as hard as I can so that we can salvage something out of this season. All of those things seem to me like Mike McCarthy can't possibly survive this carnage, especially since nobody inside the building seems to have answers.
It's very frustrating. It's frustrating for everybody. Frustrating for the players. Frustrating for the coaches. I know it's disappointing for the fans. But we have a lot of moving parts going on, and we just have to be cleaner and more detailed in certain spots. We're not playing well enough.
It sucks, to be honest. I mean, it's not so much coping. It's moving on to the next one. I mean, you can't dwell on it. I mean, what happens in the past is now in the past. And we're going to go look at this film, correct what we need to. And you know, we got to go out there and play better. Get in the end zone. We get in the end zone, we have a whole different conversation.
Except that the Cowboys are not getting into the end zone. This might be a new low for them. Two snaps in the red zone against the Texans. Two snaps in the red zone. And CeeDee Lamb, he certainly bears a good chunk of the blame. Everybody on that team does. But the fact that no one seems to have any real answers, that's disturbing. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Now, on the bright side, for Texas, as in the state of Texas, football fans, there have to be some of you that are rooting for the Texans. It's not all dejected Cowboys fans. Well, Joe Mixon has given that offense a completely different wrinkle, one that is really up when he's healthy. And I know he missed a couple games earlier this year, but when he's healthy, it gives that offense a completely different dimension.
At the 45-yard line of Dallas, first and 10. Hand off Mixon, starts right, cuts back left, has room, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, rock and roll, touchdown, Joe Mixon.
And no flags.
CJ gets the snap, here's Mixon, running to the right, he's got all day, runs across the goal line, two TDs on the evening for Monday Night Mixon.
I like that nickname. A pair of first quarter touchdowns for the running back. And the second one comes after a Cooper Rush interception, capped a 10-play drive that lasted about 5 minutes. Cowboys don't have the ability to come back from a big hole. And so maybe you thought this one was over by the time they got early into the third quarter. But a really impressive defensive sequence for the Texans. Now, it's funny, you had to kind of follow the bouncing ball, but when you break it down, when you watch the video, this was some work, some hard work by the Texans to not just force a fumble, but then recover it, not once, but twice.
Second and six for Dallas from their 40. Cooper Rush with Dattle to his left, bunch formation right after motion. Rush in trouble. Strip sack. Who's got it? It's still loose. Texans pick it up. Here's Barnett on the run. 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown! Scoop! Score! Derek Barnett!
Well, it was a little more complicated than that, actually. Not just the scoop and the score. And because he forced the fumble, he gets credit for that if you're keeping score at home. That fumble, though, gets, as he forces it out of Cooper Rush's hands, it gets corralled by Guyton. And so then after Guyton has the ball, what happens? Well, it's knocked away again by another member of the Texans. This is kind of funny. The number of different paws that had their hands on that ball is funny. So Tyler Guyton, he caught it. He's trying to run away when Jalen Petrie knocks the ball loose again. And as it gets knocked out, then Barnett picks it up and is able to go the other way into the end zone and get the actual touchdown. So at that point, Dallas was down 10, though it didn't feel like they had a whole lot of ability to come back, but a really neat moment for Derek Barnett, since he also had a sack to go along with this sequence in the forced fumble. He is our Defensive Player of the Week, sponsored by the Navy Federal Credit Union, who proudly serves the Armed Forces, DOD, veterans, and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. The call is there with Mark Vandermeer on the Texans radio network. And yeah, that was a huge moment for D'Amico Ryan's defense.
The run game starts with our offensive line. I asked them to challenge them to play fast, play aggressive. Thought they did a really nice job. And Joe, when he's on, he's a force for us. Over 100 yards, 3 touchdowns, just really liked the way we just kept turning it in the run game, and proud of the guys for stepping up to the challenge. Derek Barnett, the play he made really changed the game for us, right? It flipped the momentum. It got everybody juiced up on the sideline. It was just a huge play. Him get the strip sack, and for Petrie to come up and force the ball out, like, when something we talk about and we harp on is attacking the football, and we talked about this week, not just attacking it, going to score. So that was a huge play.
That was a huge play for D'Amico Ryans for the defense. Later on, after the fifth Houston sack on fourth down, Joe Mixon tacks on his third rushing touchdown of the game. So he ends up with 100 plus yards, 141 yards for the team. And yeah, the way that they are able to hit you hard with not just the passing game. So Nico Collins ends up with that very first pass from CJ Stroud. It goes, 50 plus yards for a TD. But it gets called back on an illegal man downfield. So a flag waves that off. But to have Nico Collins back in the equation, too, we know what Tank Dell can do along with CJ Stroud. They have multiple ways that they can hurt you. And I know they haven't been in a great rhythm offensively, but D'Amico points to the offensive line before he talks about that defense. John Mechie comes up with some big catches. Dalton Schultz at the tight end position. They've got everything they need. It's been a bit disjointed. The offensive line, while it played really well on Monday night, they've had a couple of moving pieces as well. I like what they were able to do going on the road, not far, but going on the road and getting their seventh win, which keeps them right there in the mix in the AFC. So we'll hear a little more from the post after we wrap up week 11. What? And we're seeking the wisdom of our fans that are listening. Where will there be coaching changes in the offseason? I've got my list. We kind of went over them earlier. I don't see how Mike McCarthy survives this disaster in Dallas. Jacksonville seems to me that Doug Peterson is probably dead man walking. Couple of others I've got on my list. We're asking you to weigh in as well at Amy After Hours. You can also vote for the TD of the week. And then our Facebook page, 855-212-4227. Good morning to you. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
We're in the fourth. High formation. Stroud under center. Snap. Spin. Handoff. Mixon. Dives. And touchdown. His third touchdown tonight on the ground. That ties a team record also done by Ryan Motes and Arian Foster along with Ben Tate.
You know, Joe has been amazing. He's been somebody who came in and taught guys how to win more, you know, because we won some games last year. But, you know, he taught guys what it takes to get to that bowl, you know. And, you know, we're not there yet, but, you know, we're taking strides.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The voice of CJ Stroud. I don't think there's any reason to worry about him in a sophomore slump. Just things change. He lost his top wide receiver for a while. We talked about the offensive line having to move some pieces around. Joe Mixon was out for a little bit. And let's not forget, defenses have more tape on him and are more familiar with what he's going to do. I love his poise. I love how he handles his business out there on the field. And I still think the future is very bright for these Texans, and they're on the way up. Still leading in the AFC South with a couple of game margin over the rest of the division because no other team in the South is above 500. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We're looking at potential coaching changes in the NFL through week 11. We've had two already. Do you believe Darren Rizzi in New Orleans or Jeff Ulbrich in New York? The Jets are likely to keep those jobs and have the interim removed from their names. Dallas seems like a gimme, although you never know with Jerry Jones. Man, Mike McCarthy may want something different, but I actually wonder if this could be the last head coaching stop for him. I don't know. I just wonder if sometimes you've got, well, it's a copycat league, right? You've got teams that are more and more going younger and trying something new, fresh off a Sean McVay system or some of the other Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco, wondering if maybe Mike McCarthy has gotten to the point where teams don't think he can still communicate with a locker room which has a bunch of young guys. I'm not saying that, only that these are some of the things that you hear. I still think, according to the way guys speak about him, that he has the respect of the league. Of course, you never know when a microphone is in front of someone. We certainly know that about 25% of the NFL turns over each year when it comes to its head coaches, but you can only do that so many years in a row before you kind of run out of places where you don't have new coaches. I mean, last year, Seattle was a big deal with Pete Carroll. Obviously, New England, two of the longest tenured head coaches with Bill Belichick. Now you're looking at places like, I don't know, Cleveland, would they make a change? This is not on Kevin Stefanski, in my opinion, but we know the owners at times can be volatile with their decision-making and go against the grain. I've heard people throw Cincinnati out there and Zach Taylor, but it seems like he and Joe Burrow have a really good relationship. Tennessee just turned over. The Colts have most recently hired a new head coach, and they've had their quarterback challenges. The Raiders, they just put Antonio Pierce in this job as the full-time head coach to start this season or to begin the offseason. Do you dare make a change there already? The Giants are another one that people are questioning. Will Brian Daboll keep the support of his ownership, the Mara family, or what if they think they can get Bill Belichick? That's another big question, too. So we've definitely got a lot of coaches on the hot seat. It's just about varying degrees of heat. So it's time for a heat check, if you will, at Amy After Hours or at A-Law Radio, and then our Facebook page. I put up a post, and yes, my gift does come from Jerry Jones. Thank you, Jerry Jones. Jim Harbaugh has been a revelation for the Chargers. This is one place like Houston and D'Amico Ryans where they've got the right guy. And to see the way they snatched victory from the jaws of potential defeat, a potential collapse against the Bengals on Sunday night. Is this a breath of fresh air for the Chargers? Generally, they find new ways to lose. Instead, now they're 7-3.
I've been having this feeling really since the beginning. Back in April, May, June, that we got the right guys at the right time, and that's all a coach can ask for. And just keep building.
Jim Harbaugh he's a guy who knows how to hit the ground running. He's certainly a guy who has made major changes and turned other college and NFL programs into winners from the moment he stepped on the property. Had a chance to catch up with Shannon Farron, who is the sideline reporter for the Chargers Radio Network. She's been following Jim Harbaugh's career going back to his days at Stanford. And I asked her, what is the biggest difference between those teams that would find creative ways to blow a lead and blow a game versus this 2024 version of the Chargers?
Coach Harbaugh, Amy, you're always so good at hitting the nail on the head. It is absolutely a different culture here with the LA Chargers. It is a different mindset here. If you saw the game last night on Sunday Night Football, you knew that this was going to end with a Chargers defeat. Of course, they jump out with the lead early on. Of course, they let it slip away. And then, of course, you're thinking that they're going to lose. But you don't feel that way if you're on that sideline, the way that I have been and the way that everyone on this team has been. You just knew. You've known this whole year. It's been a different mindset. It goes back to week one against the Raiders. They jump out with that first touchdown, and you just knew they were going to win. It's a complete different mindset. Coaching should not be underestimated. The feeling that this team has and the mindset that it has is night and day from what it has been, at least as long as I've been here.
Well, when you say different mindset, what has changed about how they approach football?
Well, if you've looked at Jim Harbaugh's teams, whether it is the University of San Diego, whether it's Stanford, at the 49ers, Michigan, the Chargers now, you want somebody to play for, and these guys want to play for him. What's rewarded on this sideline is physicality. And if you watch this Chargers team, it's essentially kind of the same personnel they've had for the past few years, but it's a different mindset in terms of rewarding physicality and playing for Jim Harbaugh and him warming up with Justin Herbert, you know, taking the passes in the pregame. And it goes to him not just warming up in pregame, but doing the practices with them and going through everything, not just speeches, but everything. I mean, Quentin Johnston talked about it. He is having a super efficient sophomore season. One out of four receptions goes for a touchdown. You know, he talks about Jim Harbaugh going into the cold tub in his khakis and his shoes. I mean, there's something to be said for just enthusiasm in the building, and that's what he brings.
Oh, that's the part that stands out to me is the energy. And this is not a knock on any previous coach that they've had, but the energy that's almost indefatigable. Have you ever seen him not be fired up?
No, this is his personality. This is the way he's always been. Just like the numbers, honestly, in terms of defense, you can see like what he's done with every team is what he's doing with the Chargers. You go back to like the 2011 49ers, right? When he came in, they had no business being in the playoff conversation at all. And he turned that team around like nothing. Like I just snapped my fingers, like nothing. And he's done the same thing. In fact, like this was the most points the Chargers have allowed all season with 27, right? But like going into this game, they allowed 13.1 points per game. That's the fewest by a team with a new head coach in 20 years. The second best was that 2011 San Francisco team. It was under Jim Harbaugh. He just has this thing about coming into a facility and breathing new life into a team and making guys want to play for him.
Shannon Farron is with us from LA. She's the Chargers sideline reporter, up close and personal with this new change in culture and the different approach and certainly the energy of Jim Harbaugh. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. It's interesting, too, because he played the quarterback position. In terms of his specific impact on Justin Herbert, who he's in awe of, he tells us, right? He hears angels singing when Herbert walks out to practice. Where have you seen the impact on Justin?
Jim Harbaugh has always had a special relationship with his quarterbacks. We can go through all the programs again. We can go back to all his guys. He said this week, you know, Justin Herbert could be a tight end in the NFL. He could be an edge rusher. He's got the speed. He's got the strength. He's got the agility. He's got the athleticism. We've all seen it. He says he's off the charts. And, you know, Justin Herbert's high school coach even kind of dovetailed that. He said when he was playing football at Sheldon High, it's not even the football, honestly, Amy. It was baseball. He had this filthy fastball. They said he was the closer. He was the one they wanted on the mound at the end, that he was the power forward on the hardwood, that he was like the guy whose athleticism had him rebounding like a beast, that he was smart but never conservative. And that's what we're seeing. Mm. And his high school coach said, I've never coached anyone. And this is a guy who's had like 20 plus years experience back when Justin was in high school. He said, I've never coached anyone who cares more about winning than Justin Herbert. And that's Jim Harbaugh.
for a lot of the energy and the enthusiasm. You credit Jim Harbaugh, but certainly the players have to buy in, and that's a big deal. We're seeing that. So just maybe the Chargers have turned the corner. And yes, a new head coach can make a massive difference. We're seeing it in Cleveland with Kenny Atkinson, his second tour of duty, if you will, as a head coach in the NBA, and Jim Harbaugh back in the NFL, walks in the building, credibility off a national championship in college. There will absolutely be a handful of teams that need new head coaches come this offseason. So a big-time hire can make an immediate difference. So where do you see changes in the offing, changes on the horizon? At A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page coming up. But speaking of change, we've got a quarterback change that's been made heading into week number 12 in the NFL. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network Sports Flash.
All right, Abe, looking to snap a two-game skid. The Texans able to set the tone early.
At the 45-yard line of Dallas, first and 10. Hand off Mixon. Starts right, cuts back left, has room. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Rock and roll. Touchdown, Joe Mixon.
And no flags.
First of three touchdown runs for Joe Mixon. He ran for a buck nine, another 44 yards receiving. Texans disposed of the Cowboys 34-10. Call courtesy of the Texans Radio Network. C.J. Stroud threw for 257, hitting Nico Collins four times for 54 yards in his return, while the defense sacked Cooper Rush five times, including a 28-yard fumble return for a touchdown for Derek Barnett. Rush threw for 354, touchdown and a pick, but it's Houston that's now 7-4. Dallas fell to 3-7. Giants with a move that seemed obvious after a 2-8 start. Daniel Jones heads to the bench. Tommy DeVito leapfrogging Drew Locke to earn the start on Sunday against the Bucs.
I'm excited to see what Tommy brings to the table. That's why he's out there, Pat. Again, we had a lot of conversations, studied a lot of stuff, and again, have confidence in Tommy, and that's the reason why he's in there.
That's Giants head coach Brian Daboll. Elsewhere, Brock Purdy to the 49ers, walking wounded day-to-day now, dealing with right shoulder soreness. Checking the NBA, where the Bucks took out the Rockets 101-100 on a Damian Lillard drive with 3.9 remaining. Lillard finished with 18 points and 10 assists. Clippers cooled off the Warriors 102-99. Heat rolled the Sixers 106-89 as Jimmy Butler had 30 points and 10 rebounds. Knicks dominated the Wizards 134-106. Jalen Brunson with 26. Magic handled the Suns 109-99. Hawks clipped the Kings 109-108. Raptors overpowered the Pacers 130-119 behind 39 from R.J. Barrett. And the Bulls finished off the Pistons 122-112. Checking college hoops for Gonzaga, buried San Diego State 80-67. Auburn drubbed North Alabama 102-69. Iowa State thumped IU Indianapolis 87-52. Wisconsin upended UT Rio Grande Valley 87-84. And Arkansas had no problems with Pacific 91-72. And baseball, Rookie of the Year goes to a pair of pitchers. Paul Skeens of the Pirates took home the NL honor. Yankees Luis Gil in the American League. I'm Marco Belletti.
This is the Infinity Sports Network. Follow us on Instagram. Our handle is Infinity Sports Network. That's Infinity Sports Network to follow us on Instagram.
Jones in the shotgun. Two receivers right. Jones back. Fires one to the left, and the pass is deflected, and is it intercepted by Josie Jewell on the left sideline? I think it is.
Pulled it out of his hands.
Yes, Jewell took it away. The question is, did he roll out of bounds?
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Oh, man, so many moments we could have chosen to share with you from Daniel Jones' dubious tenure in New York, and it appears to be coming to an end. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, Bob Papa on Giants Radio. That particular moment against the Carolina Panthers, we found out on Monday from the head coach, Brian Daboll, who he himself may be on the hot seat, that he's decided to make a change at QB1.
So we're making a quarterback switch here from Daniel, and we're going to go with Tommy. I spoke with all the quarterbacks this morning before our morning meeting. Let them know what the direction that we're going. Those are never easy conversations. Got a lot of respect for all three of those guys. It's never an easy conversation to have with the players, but felt like this was a necessary move for us, and look forward to working with Tommy and getting him ready to go against Tampa. We spent a lot of time here over the last week of evaluating a lot of things, and just felt like this was the best thing for us.
Tommy DeVito as in the undrafted quarterback who played his football locally in northern New Jersey and last year was kind of all the rage for a few weeks, loves the Giants. I mean, it's kind of this cult hero type of thing. I think it's interesting that they skipped over Drew Lock, who will remain in the backup role, and they're going to Tommy DeVito. Maybe it's familiarity, but this seems to signal the end of Daniel Jones. And honestly, this is about as bad, not as much money, but about as bad as the Cleveland decision to give Deshaun Watson the guaranteed contract that they're now stuck with. Because from the moment they gave Daniel Jones the four-year, $160 million contract, and that wasn't even 2 years ago, it's been an unmitigated disaster. He's not ever looked the same as the QB that helped to lead them to the playoffs two seasons ago as a wild card. Now, remember, that was a terrific year for Saquon Barkley. And I have said over and over again that Saquon is part of the reason, a very large part of the reason why Daniel Jones looked so good that season and was able to lead them. He got the benefit. He got the big deal. One that really shook, well, had a lot of people shaking their heads around the NFL. Meanwhile, Barkley ended up not getting a deal that he wanted with the Giants, so he's now with the Eagles. This seems to me not as much about the Giants believing a change at quarterback will lead them to more wins. Seems more about making sure he doesn't get hurt, so the injury clause in his contract kicks in. We've seen this before. Derek Carr with the Raiders, Russell Wilson with the Broncos last year. Teams do this so that they don't in any way get stuck with more of the contract or have these injury clauses kick in. And, of course, they would like to be able to trade him if they possibly can. Though, when the rest of the NFL knows that a guy is going to be on the trade block, generally they're not going to offer a whole lot. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Daboll, generous enough to say, our failures are not all about the QB.
That's on everybody. That's just not on Daniel. You know, that's on me. That's on an entire offense of, performance.
True. And the offensive line has never really come together. They lost Andrew Thomas, which was a big deal. And it's been, for the most of the time that Daniel Jones has been there, it's been a mess. But they don't want to have to pay the $23 million that are guaranteed in his contract if he is injured again and hits that. Well, can't pass a physical in the offseason, but is physically unable to perform, so to speak. So, here the Giants are making a change at QB, and I wonder if that preserves the head coach. Pete has an interesting theory about what the Giants could do at head coach. And is this wishful thinking, or do you actually think it's a possibility, Pete?
Well, I think it's always a possibility, considering the friendship of John Mara and Bill Belichick. So I think it's possible, but I also think that Mr. Mara is committed to this structure until at least a quarterback is selected, and then that's when the clock starts on the Giants brain trust.
You think that he would go ahead and move forward in the draft without getting a new head coach? To me, that seems...
Yes. Yeah, I think he's not going to indict them until there's a quarterback on this team, that one that they selected.
Oh, so meaning the general manager and Brian Daboll. So yep. Joe Shane and Brian Daboll get their shot at selecting the next quarterback.
Unless it falls apart completely.
And if it blows up in their faces, then they get fired?
I think that's when the clock starts on their real evaluation.
Interesting. All right. So that's a theory that I had not heard. Give them the chance, despite what's happened this season and last season, give them the chance to select a quarterback. Right. And then you decide if you want to keep them as the coaching and general manager tandem.
Right. Because Gettleman selected Daniel Jones and selected Saquon Barkley. And they inherited a lot of the cap problems that came from Dave Gettleman. So you have to kind of work out of it and try to pick your quarterback. Now, they gave him the contract extension, but it was off a good season, so they were stuck in that spot. You can make the case, hey, Barkley, they should have signed Barkley over Jones, but
Well, but you need a quarterback in the NFL. Right. And the question always is, if not Daniel Jones, then who? It's the devil you know, the devil you don't know with a quarterback, because there aren't enough of them to go around, especially if you don't feel like you can find one in the draft that fits what you want to do, or you don't fall in love with a guy that's coming out in the draft and will be available when you are selecting. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. While we're talking about quarterbacks, they will not be making a change again in Carolina. Instead, Dave Canales, first-year head coach, he's sticking with the former number one overall pick, Bryce Young.
You know, this is about the continued progress. This is about Bryce, you know, looking more and more confident, you know, as he's out there in Germany. Just felt a real confidence and an aggressiveness to his play and all those things. And of course, the end result, winning, you know. So he continues to do things that put us in a position to put him back out there and continue to build on that.
Back-to-back wins for the Carolina Panthers, which has got to feel like slivers of hope for them. I've read some people saying that Dave Canales and even Marco said he could end up getting fired in Carolina, but I don't think that's the case. I believe that they've got to be happy with the fact that now they're seeing more of Bryce Young, or more of the positives and the skill set that Bryce Young can bring to the table, because Dave Canales is working with him. So I actually think that they're going to stick there. And if Bryce Young continues to make improvements, they're going to stay with him too, because, again, he's very talented, but just the system. Well, you have to game the system there in Carolina, for heaven's sakes. We're talking about former number one overall picks. Well, we know Trevor Lawrence is not healthy for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and this is certainly a team where you can look at and think that Doug Peterson is on the hot seat.
I think you got to be really, really careful when you start pointing fingers at certain people. It's a dangerous thing, and I'm not going to do that. Not doing it, not right now, because that's, as a head coach in this league, that's going through what we're going through. You're pointing a finger, and if it's going to be pointed, it needs to be pointed at me. Start with me.
We'll see whether these coaches survive to the end of the year and then the changes come, or if they are made more in season. Sometimes teams like to get a jump on that coaching wheel and just the process of figuring out what they're looking for in their next head coach. So you can find that question up at Amy After Hours, plus the TD of the Week candidates, and then on our Facebook page. Wanted to mention, too, before the top of the hour, how much I love the Paul Skeens addition to the Pittsburgh Pirates. And I saw the tweet from Major League Baseball indicating that he had been selected as the National League Rookie of the Year, which is awesome. Now the Pirates have to find a way to keep him in Pittsburgh long term.
It's cool. And I think the biggest thing is just stay present through it all. That's helped me this year. I've surrounded myself with good people, I think, and I've been super lucky to experience all the things that I have. So just going to try to continue to stay present and enjoy the ride.
He's only 14 months out of college, and he was must-see TV this year. Certainly a winner, and the strikeout, so much fun for the Pirates. But yeah, I want them to find a way to keep him in-house, because you've got this cornerstone you want to build around him. The Yankees end up with the American League Rookie of the Year, so another pitcher, 26 years old, Luis Gil. 2 years removed from Tommy John surgery, so we know there is life now after Tommy John. This is the beginning of baseball's big award week. So Cy Youngs and Managers of the Year and, oh yeah, the MVPs. That'll come out later in the week. But tonight, don't forget Celtics Cavaliers with that 15-0 record. They're heading into Boston. We'll talk about it when we reconvene for our Hump Show. Have a great Tuesday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Boom!